The Mickey Miles Podcast is proud to partner with MEI and Mouse Fan Travel. They are professionals and they do the best job at helping you have a stress-free and magical vacation by taking the worrying out of planning. They are a fee-free agency and can help with your plans to any Disney destination, Disney cruises, but also other destinations and other cruises. We use them and highly recommend that you try them by visiting MEI-travel.com, mousefantravel.com, or you can visit them by clicking on the link at the Mickey Miles Podcast website.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 76 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa from WW Today. And with me on the show tonight, ready to give another shout out, is Michelle Scribner-McLean. How you doing, Michelle?
I'm great. How are you doing, Mike?
It's been quite a week, you know.
Busy.
We'll get through it.
Busy week?
Busy week, long days, and the worst part is that it's impacted my running a little bit, so.
Oh, boy.
Get through it.
Well, I'm out of school, but I have. I seem to be busier than ever with meetings and things like that, so I'm really waiting for summer to come, but. Anyway, on a positive note, we have a shout out to somebody whose name is Jen LaForge. And Jen tweeted that she was going to be running on the treadmill, and she was happy to be listening to the Mickey Miles Podcast. It helped it go a little better for her. So thanks, Jen, and we hope you had a great run.
I give a lot of credit to people who train on treadmills because I can't. I just can't.
It's tricky. All right. What are we doing tonight?
I think it's time to do some more questions.
We have a lot of questions. I'm really liking these questions that are coming in. It's been a very busy Run Disney week too, hasn't it?
It's been very busy, of course, with last week's open registration for the Glass Slipper Challenge. And actually, you know, I think that it's a good time to answer a question on it. And our first question comes from Emerson Pratt, who asks a question about the Glass Slipper Challenge. And he says, if the half marathon is not sold out and the 10K is not sold out and you can register for both, why can't you register for the Glass Slipper Challenge? And I guess what he's referring to, Michelle, is that the Glass Slipper Challenge sold out real fast. However, if you still want to do the 10K, you can do that. If you still want to do the half marathon, you can still do that. But you just can't do the Glass Slipper Challenge. And he's wondering why.
I'm wondering why, too, because I was I signed up as a DVC member early, and I sat on the sidelines and kind of watched this whole thing play out. And by, you know, after just a few hours, it was 80%, 83% people were reporting. And I think I mentioned to you how long it took for the whole thing to sell out. I can't remember. Do you remember?
I think you said 6 hours.
Yeah, so it was really, really fast. And so I thought this was a great question. If you could still register for both of those races that are part of the Glass Slipper Challenge, why can't you register for the Glass Slipper? So what do you think? I don't know.
Well, I'm not a race director, nor do I play one on a podcast, but my opinion is this, that when the Run Disney folks come up with an idea like this, where you have a tandem race, or whatever you want to call it, where you have two components to make up an event, what they do is they project how many participants they feel would be participating in such an event. We both know that we've seen as many as 25,000 people in a race down there. And my guess is that's the threshold that they look at, 25,000. If that's the case, then let's say, for instance, that they feel that, oh, maybe 13,000 people will be interested in doing this package deal where they do a 10K on a Saturday and a half marathon on a Sunday. But there are also those people, Michelle, who are not really at that level that they would feel confident in doing that. And that could be not just from a physical level, but maybe from a financial level. And they are possibly doing their first half marathon or doing their first 10K. And they don't want to shut those people out. So my guess is that there are X number of slots that they have allocated for the Saturday-Sunday package. And they have also said, well, let's also set aside so many slots for people who are just doing the 10K and people who are just doing the half. They don't want to shut out anyone. They don't want to deny anyone the opportunity to do not just both races, but one of those races. That's my thought.
Oh, so you make a good point. So I'm also thinking, in addition to the financial commitment, I'm wondering if the people who register for the Glass Slipper Challenge are maybe more experienced runners. And by opening it up so that people can do the single races, Disney's ensuring that the field of runners is going to be more equal, from the more experienced to all the way to the novice, which is, you know, what Run Disney events are known for is being very novice friendly. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. I think it would be interesting. I really would love to know what the breakdown is of the slots. But I think you're right, Michelle. One of the things that I believe we've talked about on the podcast before is that with the years go by, as each running season goes by, we've noticed how quickly these Run Disney races fill up. And one of the thoughts we had was that there is new blood, and this new blood is sort of giving the Run Disney marketing group a run for their money, and it is telling them that there's interest, and every year there's more and more new interest, and that, I believe, is their lifeblood. It's not the veteran runners. It's not the veteran runners. It's more of the combination of the veteran runners and the novice runners. So I agree with what you said.
So as I look at it today, now we're in mid-June, it looks like the half marathon is 58%. The 10K, the Disney Enchanted 10K, is 88%. So I think that's interesting, too, kind of going off of Emerson's question here. Again, I think a trend that we're seeing is that these 10Ks are becoming very, very popular. It's an inaugural race, and I know that you and I both love to do the inaugural races, but also we've talked a lot about this bridge between the 5K and the half marathon, the 10K being a really kind of a nice bridge. And I'm wondering if people are moving up to bigger races, too, in addition to wanting that novel bling for the inaugural race.
I think you're right. I think there are bridges that go from the 5K to the 10K, from 10K to the half marathon. And a lot of people might say, well, this could be a bridge, too, to Goofy, although I think it'd be better off doing back-to-back halves than a 10K and a half marathon to prepare for Goofy. But yeah, it's a very interesting question. And Emerson, thank you for sending it in.
It's a great question. Okay, and I want to say thank you to Emerson, too, because he's always very supportive and active on our Mickey Miles Podcast Facebook page, and we appreciate that. So our next question is from TJ Fry, and he says, I'm registered for the Goofy, and most of the questions I have are not related to training or even race strategy, but other key aspects. He actually asked some questions that we answered on our last show, so I edited this out a little bit, TJ. I hope you don't mind. But one question that we didn't answer, we've talked about it before, but I thought I'd bring it up again. His question is, should I use one pair of shoes or two pair of shoes? Typically, I've never rotated shoes. And I know this is a question that a lot of people have. And running shoes can be expensive. What do you think, Mike?
Running shoes can be expensive. If you know if you know how many miles you're going to do before a key race that you've registered for, then you are the best candidate for deciding How many pairs of shoes you're going to go through? If you have the ability to have two pairs of shoes, I think it bodes well for you. Number one, they'll last longer, and number two, you'll be training on better conditioned shoes, so you're less likely to get hurt. Rotating, some people will change every other day. Some people will change every week. Personally, Michelle, if I could, I would do that. And I have done that. And I actually have two or three pair. And depending upon how I feel, I'll switch them either every day or every week. So to answer your question, TJ, my feeling is that if you can, I would definitely use two pairs of shoes and rotate.
Well, I also use two pairs of shoes, and I have two identical inserts for the pairs of shoes. I use Superfeet, and they're exactly the same type of a running Asics Nimbus. The only difference is they're a different color, so I'm going to be a little girly here. I'm not really a girly girl, but I change them based on what I'm wearing. So I have a purple and gray pair, and a a blue and gray pair, and a purple pair, and the one of them is a little bit newer. But what I do is I've marked when I got them on my Garmin Connect. There's a little calendar there, and I wrote when I got my new shoes, so it helps me to see how many miles I've run and when it's time to start to switch those shoes out, so I'll buy another pair. But I know Mike has gotten me into doing this, which is, at least with Asics, I'm sure it's the case with other shoes, they're constantly making new versions of the shoes. So for me, it's not a big deal to have last year's version. So if I like a shoe and it's the new one has been released, I'll buy the old shoe. And there are all sorts of places online where you could get good deals for your shoes, and I don't have as many in stock as Mr. Scopa does, but I do keep an eye, and I know when I'm ready to get a new one, I'll start shopping around, and because I know exactly my size, exactly the type of shoe, I can order it online. But initially I was fitted at a running store, and I'd recommend that if you're getting new shoes that you do that. But once you have them locked in, go ahead and order them online and get them cheaper.
Michelle, you said something that I think is very important. I wish I had said it, and that is that if you are going to use two pairs of shoes, really, really important, that they be the same model shoes,
right.
Because you don't want your feet to land differently every other day. You want them to land the same way every day.
And at the running store, they told me that I should, regardless of how often I change my shoes, I can keep the same inserts for about a year or two. So those have to be changed out as well, but they have a little bit more life in them. But unlike me, Mike, I don't think you change based on what you're wearing. I think you have your basic shoes, I see. It's the same shoe all the time, yeah. Right?
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
No, I mean, but the same color. You even have the same color.
Oh, no, I mean... I have had it in, Asics 2100 series, and I've had it in black, blue, green, red, all kinds of colors.
Right.
It doesn't matter what color. What matters to me if I get a good price. Okay. The next question comes from Ian Sr., and he says, "Hi, Mike and Michelle." He says, "Next year I will be heading to Walt Disney World to compete in the inaugural Dopey Challenge."
Woo-hoo.
In 2012 and 2013, I headed down with my whole family, and we made a mini vacation out of the marathon weekend. This year, however, I will be heading down alone, and I will be staying off property about 10 minutes from Epcot. My question really is about park logistics. Typically, we head to the parks after the races and spend the day in the Magic Kingdom on Marathon Monday after a character breakfast celebration. This year, I have to head home on the evening after the marathon, so my plan is as follows. Arrive on Wednesday the 8th, head straight to the expo. As the 5K starts at 6:30 on Thursday morning, this may be my best opportunity for a late night. I plan to head over to the Magic Kingdom as this is my best chance to see the electrical parade and the fireworks. After the 5K on Thursday, I am thinking of either Hollywood Studios or back to the Magic Kingdom. Being without my two little boys, I can get the chance to see things like the Hall of Presidents and some of the other sit-down shows in the parks, which they typically won't sit through. On Friday after the 10K, I am planning for a day in Epcot and staying through to see Illuminations. The charity I am running for, Autism Speaks, has a dinner that night for the team, and last year it was there. I can always swap this day around with Thursday. On Saturday after the half marathon, I plan on my last hurrah in the Magic Kingdom and an early night. I see myself taking a train tour around the perimeter that day for sure. The last 2 years after the half marathon, my family hit Hollywood Studios and had a character dine at Hollywood and Vine. That rhymes. Which was great for refueling, and hit the bakery for a treat instead of a sit-down dinner. Sunday being my last event and last day, I plan to head back to Epcot after a nice long session in an ice bath. At Interventions West, I plan on visiting the character meet and greet to have my picture taken with all of my medals. I will walk around for a few hours to keep my legs moving before heading to the airport and my journey home. So here's the question, or questions. Does this seem reasonable? I am not one for sitting still, and this is way dialed back on my usual activities over marathon weekend. Where would you recommend for a nice vegetarian pre-marathon meal on Saturday lunch in the Magic Kingdom? As I cannot stay for a character breakfast on Marathon Monday and will not be getting my Mickey waffles fix, where in Epcot would you recommend for a Disney-themed blowout treat? Finally, have you thought about the meetup for a marathon weekend, as I would like to fit this into my plan? All right, Michelle, number one. His first question, does his plan seem reasonable? What do you think?
Oh, well, I know what you're going to say about this. You're going to say, absolutely not. First of all, I want to mention that I received this email in the question email, and he typed this all on his iPhone, which I think is amazing. He deserves a round of applause just for that. His thumbs are going to need a rest. This is a highly individual question. So I have a hard time answering it for you, Ian, because I've seen you post on Facebook, and I know that you do a lot of races. It seems to me that you've done this before, and it's very dialed back. It seems reasonable for you. It is not the plan that I'm going to be using. I'm also doing the Dopey, and I'm going to be doing it a lot. Going to be doing a lot less than that, and it's going to be difficult because I'm going to have my 14-year-old, he'll be 14, doing some of those races with me. I know he'll want to run around, but I am going to take it very slowly over the weekend. But it seems to me that you know what works for you. So should we start with that one and then go over to the question about the pre-marathon meal, Mike? Because I'm sure you want to chime in on this. I know you're going to have an opinion on this one.
Well, Ian has, like you said, he has... I'm looking over his question, and
it scrolls said several pages.
Yeah, I don't. Does it ever say that he has done the Goofy? I don't remember seeing that.
I don't. No, he doesn't mention that, but he definitely sounds like an experienced marathoner. I know we've had emails from him before, so I don't know.
That's a huge thing, because if you've never done the Goofy, then well, this is really quite the plan. And even if you have done the Goofy, and I've talked with many people, and we both have talked with people who've done the Goofy Challenge before, Michelle, and a lot of them have said, you know, it's only a 10K, but that's another 6 miles that I have to think about. And
what do you mean? It's only a 10K extra?
It's an extra 6.2 miles for that weekend.
Yeah, well, I mean, and for a lot of people, it's, you know, a lot of people who do the Goofy do the 5K, but a lot of people don't. So it may be an extra almost 10 miles. So because he's doing the Dopey, which includes the 5K.
Yeah, so that's a thing. So let's assume that he, all right, I'm going to assume that he is a Goofy veteran, and he's doing this. You're absolutely right, Michelle. I think I have an issue with him. Number one, I think that the success for Dopey will depend upon the first two races. I think how you approach those first two races will definitely impact the last two. And when we had Jeff on, Jeff Galloway on, I could have sworn that Jeff talked about walking those 2 days.
He did. Yeah, he did.
And
I don't think he meant walking all around the parks.
No. But he meant walking the races.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's sort of a microcosm of how he feels about how you should do races, knowing that if you take care of yourself early on in the race, like if you take yourself care of yourself early on in a marathon with doing the run, walk, run, then you'll be much more prepared to handle the finish of the race. By the same token, taking it easy those first 2 days, and that includes not just the races, but what you do afterwards, will have an impact on the last two.
Right. So, I can understand his dilemma, because he is going to be there without family. He's probably thinking that he's going to be able to hit a lot of things that he doesn't usually hit, and he doesn't want to just sit in the hotel room. But, Ian, we want you to be safe, too. So, but on the other hand, I think he probably knows what he can do better than we do. It's not the plan I would use. It's not the plan that a lot of people would use. But I think it is the plan that many people will use, too.
I have another question you might know. Is Ian from the United Kingdom?
Yes.
So we have a 5-hour
difference. No. He lives in the U.S. I think he's,
originally from the forget what I said.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a challenge, Ian. I don't want you to I want you to make sure that I think the most important part of all this is how much time you spend on your feet after each race. I think that if you cut back on your time on your feet, I think you have a somewhat reasonable schedule. But Michelle, you know me well enough to know that you know I'd like to see people off their feet if they're going to do something like 48 miles in 4 days.
I'd love, Ian, for you to report back and let us know how you did, and hopefully we don't have a meetup planned for the marathon weekend yet. You're much more organized than we are. We don't have one for the Tower of Terror, and we don't have one yet planned for the Dumbo. But anyway, we'll let you know about that. And when we do, we'd love to hear how the plan worked for you. So the next question I think is very interesting, which is, where would you recommend for a nice vegetarian pre-marathon meal on Saturday lunch at the Magic Kingdom? And I'm going to jump in for this one because I'm vegetarian too. I find the Magic Kingdom to be one of the trickiest parks to eat at. Yeah. And Mike, you have to remind me, because I never know what it's called. What is the place across from Pirates that's not open half the time?
Tortuga Tavern.
Okay. That has a great vegetarian, it's not a burrito, it's a vegetarian taco. When I'm there and Mike's there, I drag him over there, and half the time it's closed, but that's good. Another thing that I do is go, I know Mike likes this restaurant very much, the Plaza. However, there's not a lot of vegetarian fare there. What I do, and I always get eyebrows when I do this, is I get a Reuben sandwich without the meat. So it's yummy, but it has no meat in it. And then, of course, you could go to Crystal Palace if you wanted to really fuel up and have a character experience. But there aren't a lot of vegetarian places. Mike, what about that place near Tomorrowland? Didn't they open that up? Where it used to be the noodle station. That's just open for breakfast, right?
It's for breakfast.
Okay.
I was thinking of, again, vegetarian could mean a number of things, because there are some vegetarians who would not go for fish, and I was thinking Columbia Harbor House, too.
Right. Well, they have a fried fish thing. But, of course, there's the new Be Our Guest restaurant, and they have salads. However, I personally would not eat salad before a long race. I try to stay away from salads. We won't talk about in detail why, but the next day I don't want to be remembering that I had a salad while I'm running a marathon. So so I don't know. I'm thinking maybe Crystal Palace would be the best bet for a variety for vegetarians. Yeah.
I think that anywhere where you can get some protein is going to be helpful. Because there's going to be some replenishing required for these four days in January.
The Magic Kingdom is just not the best place for vegetarians. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the next one I'd like to make a recommendation for. Where would we recommend for a Disney-themed blowout treat? I would love to have a Mickey Miles podcast meet at the place that we like to go after a long race that is in the Boardwalk area, which is the... Beaches and Cream. It slipped my mind for a second. Beaches and Cream is fantastic to go for a Sunday or a kitchen sink or what's your favorite, Michael?
No Way Jose. Yeah. And what I would say is that you, and I've done this on a weekend where I went to run. Actually, I think I did a mini marathon weekend where I did a 5K and a 15K. And after I did the 5K, I took a shower and I went over to the beach, Beaches and Cream, and I sat at the counter and I had a meal. And so you could do that, Ian. Being alone, it would probably be a lot easier for you to find a spot to sit down and just walk up and get a spot rather than a whole bunch of people for a meet after a race.
Yeah, but you know, I think you make a really good point, too, because I think that is a really nice place to go. It's like a friendly place where you can go when you're by yourself, too, to sit at the counter or not. Everybody just seems to be very, you know, friendly and open to that type of an experience. But you're more than likely to see some Mickey Miles people there, too.
Yep.
All right. Are we ready for our next question?
Go ahead.
This is from Ashley, and she actually suggested this as a whole podcast, but I think we can get to it in a question. She says, "Hi, Mike and Michelle. I've been a listener almost since the beginning, and I'm happy to say that I have been faithfully running since November. My running buddy and I have been slowly building our endurance. We started with short running, long walking intervals, and then decided to do a Couch to 5K program. We're just 1 week shy of completing it. Congratulations, Ashley and partner. Despite my running and cross training on off days, I have yet to lose any weight, and boy, do I need to lose a lot. I was reading a Jeff Galloway blog the other day, and he mentioned that weight loss is based 80% on what we eat and 20% on how active we are. I would love to hear about eating and running, specifically related to running and weight loss." Great question. I'm sure a lot of people have that question. She says, "Thank you so much for doing the podcast and for the website. Both of you are encouraging and inspiring, and I appreciate you." We appreciate you, Ashley. This is a great question. Mike, you want me to jump in or you want to go for it?
Ladies first. Go ahead.
Okay. So last year, Ashley, I was trying to lose about 20 pounds while I was training for the marathon. And I decided to go to Weight Watchers and I found it to be almost impossible. In fact, my stories from my marathon running friends were that it is very, very difficult to run and to lose weight. And sometimes people, because they say, "Oh, I just ran 5 miles, so I'm going to go home and eat." Sometimes it's the opposite. You end up gaining weight. So what I decided to do is to put that on hold, run my race, and this past spring I've started to lose weight. So I've lost about 15 pounds. It's much easier if you're not on a grueling training schedule. The best advice I have, I want to say one more thing too, which is I would go to Weight Watchers and I would have run like 20 miles in a day, and people would say, "Oh, I lost 3 pounds," and I'd get on the scale and I would have lost, you know, 0.2 pounds. So I was very, very discouraged and hungry all the time. So I think that the best advice that I heard about it is exactly what Jeff Galloway says. My brother is a Ironman, and he's had to lose weight and tried all sorts of different. He's worked with nutritionists, and he said the best advice is, he basically just said to me, he can say this because he's my brother, he said, "You just have to shut your pie hole." And it's basically an input thing. You know, what you put in is, if you put in less, you will lose more weight. So it really kind of jives with what Jeff Galloway says. It's 80% on what you eat. So my best suggestion for you is to try to journal. If you're not doing something like Weight Watchers or some other program that's approved, do something like Lose It, which is a great little app. It's free, and it asks you to put in your weight, how much you want to lose, and you could track everything. But journaling, I think, is the key to weight loss. That's my answer quickly. What do you think, Mike?
Well, I think we should call CNN and Google and Yahoo and all the networks, because I'm going to tell everyone what the secret is to losing weight. I'm going to debunk all the weight loss scenarios, all the fads, all the diet fads, all the cookbooks, Weight Watchers, you name it. I'm going to tell everybody the secret to losing weight. Are you ready, Michelle?
Yes.
The secret to losing weight is less input and more output. That's just as simple as it can be. I've talked with professional trainers, and they said, you know, let's face it, it's input and output. If you can figure out something that works for you over a long, extended period of time and enables you to change your behavior, then you're on the road to success. Now, it's very hard to exercise, increase your exercise and decrease your intake, so you have to figure out how to deal with that. And the best way to deal with that is to do it on a very, very slow process. Don't say, okay, as of today, no bread, no this or whatever. Maybe what you should do is before you even start your diet, get it, you know, go through a typical day, eat whatever you eat normal, and then keep track of, we'll talk about calories, talk about fat and everything, and then maybe say, I'm going to cut 5% down. And maybe you gradually do that. I mean, I've had success, and I've had, you know, not so much success doing a whole bunch of things, but that's what kind of works for me. And Ashley, I think that you need to figure out what is best for you. You don't want to overdo it. You don't want to sacrifice nutrition. You don't want to endanger your health. But think about what you eat. Think about what you could cut out, and just cut out a little bit at a time, just a little bit at a time as you increase. And you'll find that you'll be motivated. And we wish you the best of luck, and let us know what happened.
Yeah, and I also recommend Ashley, too. You know, of course, we're not nutritionists, but definitely go talk to your doctor, too, and see what is safe for you. And do let us know.
Our next question comes from John Maloney, who says, hi, Mickey Mollers. If I'm already signed up for the marathon in January, is there a way to upgrade to the Goofy? My guess is no.
My guess is yes. I know there is.
Well, now he's already signed up. I know what you, I think I know what you're thinking, Michelle. If you haven't signed up for anything, I would go with your answer. But if you've already signed up for something.
Oh
wait a minute, the Goofy. Yeah, not the Dope, but the Goofy.
Yeah, the Goofy. Yeah, I think I've done this before. I did do this for something, and I can't remember. But my recollection, so I'm looking at the Run Disney website. Right now, Mike, the marathon is open at 75%. That's the one he's in. He wants to move to the Goofy, which is 74%. So you're saying Disney's not going to take his extra money? They will. So what you need to do, I can't remember the race that I did this for, but just write a note to Run Disney, give them your registration information. They will charge you the difference between the two races, and I believe there's some sort of a fee for changing your registration too. It's, you know, $25, $35, but that's not a problem. I'm sure it's not a problem.
Michelle, do you think they would do that, or do you think they would say to him, register for the Goofy, send a note to us telling us you want to cancel your marathon entry, and we will refund. You don't think
I would not do it that way, because the races are non-refundable. I would say, this is my, here's a copy of my entry. I would like to upgrade it to the Goofy. That's how I would go about doing it. I would not register for another whole race and then think that you're going to get a refund.
Well, it depends upon what Run Disney says too.
Yeah. I would love to hear back from you, John, but I'm pretty sure that's the way that it's done. You just send them a note, and they'll charge you the difference and plus a fee, because there's going to be some sort of a change fee that they ask you to pay. But report back to us and let us know, because I'm sure you're not the only one. Okay, the next question is from Melissa Stone, and this is a good question for us. I'm sure we can answer this one. She says, I'm doing great in my training. What's worrying me is when the weather in Pittsburgh changes and I won't be able to train outside as much as I really like to. What do other Northerners do? Mike?
Well, there are two options. Number one, find an indoor track. Number two, run on a treadmill.
No, there's a third option too.
Well, third option is to run outside.
Yeah, and a lot of people do that.
And I do that unless it's really slippery. I'm going to run outside. I'll just pack on the layers and I'll run outside. You do whatever you have to do. The last ditch effort, the last option for me will be to go inside. I don't like to run inside. And I know you don't like to run inside either, Michelle, but I also know you don't like the cold weather. Is that what you would try to do, or would you run inside?
Well, I mean, you know how I train. Once it gets below 40 degrees, I am miserable and unhappy. And I did train for the marathon when it was 28 degrees, and I actually did okay with layers and things like that. One thing I learned this past winter when I had to really up my miles, and the thought of running in our indoor track, which is 7 laps per mile. When I was getting ready for my 20 mile runs or 21 mile runs, I thought, oh my gosh, I just can't bear this. So I did run outside, and I think we talked about this on an earlier show. There's a lot of great winter gear that you can use to get you ready. I'm not going to say I was happy about it, Melissa, but I did get through it. So I think 40 is where I'm comfortable. I was okay at 28 degrees with the right gear. I had hand warmers. I had the right leggings. I had layers on. So it was okay if there's no snow. But people do the treadmill. I think whatever you do, you need to stay on your training schedule. And the only thing that stops me from running outside other than the weather is inclement weather, as Mike said, if it's icy. But there are things that you can get. You know, there are the yak tracks that you can put on your sneakers if you want to. So it depends on what you're able to tolerate. But I know a lot of people who just all year long run outside. Treadmill doesn't work for me, aside if it's a short run, I can do it. But it's kind of an individual thing.
Yeah, I agree. And our next question comes from Donna, who says, "Hi, Michelle and Mike. First, let me say that I love the podcast. It is easy to forget what a blast Disney races are when running at home. Thanks for the reminder. You got me excited enough to register for the Pink Coast to Coast Medal Challenge.
Oh, it's our fault. She's blaming us.
Which is the Tink Half and the Glass Slipper Challenge. Well, actually, you have to do the glass. I think you have. That's the Tink Half and the Princess Half, I guess. I've never run two races within a month of each other. Would the best approach be just repeat the last month of my training in between races? I think, Donna, I'm sorry, Michelle, would you like to chime in on this?
Go ahead.
I think, Donna, that if you are training for a half marathon, that I think that your conditioning will be such that you really don't lose. I think I've heard Jeff say you maintain your conditioning for a half marathon up to 2 weeks. You maintain your conditioning for a full after 4. I would say that after your first half, that maybe you take a couple of days off and, you know, just slowly, keep your conditioning up. Maybe I would do maybe a 9-mile run every weekend leading up to your second race, and I think you'd be fine. Michelle?
Yeah, I think I'd alter that a little bit. I would probably run about 3 miles, you know, 2 or 3 days after your half marathon, and I would personally probably do like a 10 mile race on my long run day, which is Saturday, to keep it up. So you're going to do your race, take a few days off, do 3 miles, you know, maybe do a few another small run during the week. If it were me, the way it would go would be Tuesday I'd do 3, Thursday I'd do 3 or 4, and then Saturday I would do 10, and then follow that same pattern up until the next half marathon. That's what I would do. I have found now, Donna, my kids were even teasing me about this last night at dinner. We had a wonderful IHOP experience, and they were laughing at me because I've done several half marathons, and my older son said, "Mom, you can just do a half marathon whenever you want." And at this point I can, because I always make sure that my long runs on Saturday have a base of about 9 or 10 miles. But I know, and Mike is absolutely right, I know if I let it go for a week or two, that base is going to fade away. So at this point, I feel like I could do what you're proposing to do, and I have. I did two in a month. No, in 2 weeks, I guess I did. But you got to keep it up. You got to keep that training up. So it sounds like you're in a good mindset to do that.
The Mickey Mouse Podcast has been brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. Don't plan a trip without talking to the vacation planners at MEI or Mouse Fan Travel. They'll take the worry out of your vacation. They will go beyond what you would expect from a professional travel agency, and that's because they are as professional as they come. If you listen to this podcast, then we know that you take trips to Disney destinations as well as others, so why not have a professional travel agency help you plan your next trip? Visit our friends at mei-travel.com or mousefantravel.com, and you can also get to their site through our website, mickeymilespodcast.com. And when you get there, tell them Mike and Michelle sent you. Well, Michelle, those were some very good questions, and I'm glad that we had those particular ones, because I think that once again, there are questions that I think a lot of people have, and there are some that we anticipate, and there are some that we don't, and we're so thrilled that people are sending those questions. And so, thank you, everybody.
Yes, that sounds. They did a great job, and I love these questions, and they keep on coming in. So, thank you for sending them in, everybody. Keep them coming.
So, for Michelle Scribner-McLean, my name is Mike Scopa. We'll see you on the road.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/Mickey Miles Podcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Mickey Miles Pod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gray saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road. We'll